heard it last summer, and we're going to hear it again times 10 this summer. The Steelers have the worst quarterback in the AFC North. One problem with that, it is the exact opposite of the truth. Good morning to you. Good Monday morning. I'm Dan Kovacevic of DK Pittsburgh Sports, and this is Daily Shot of Steelers, which I offer up here every Monday through Friday morning, bright and early. If you're into hockey and or baseball, so am I. And I also offer up daily shots of Penguins and Pirates. Ben Roethlisberger is the worst quarterback in the AFC North. It was initially a whisper in 2020. Like, people were afraid to say it. Or they would say it based on Ben coming off the reconstructive elbow surgery. That was kind of like the crutch that was used to enter into the discussion. Ben, I mean, with all due respect, Ben is this and that, and 2-3 years ago he was this and that. But now, coming off of this, and with all this young talent and these three Heisman Trophy winners in the division in Baltimore, Cincinnati, and Cleveland, it's just a matter of time until Ben gets passed up. And then the season happens, and then the Steelers' end of the season happens after the 11-0 start, and then Ben loses to one of those quarterbacks in the playoffs, and it's only that much more magnified. Now it just seems, at least to me, like it's accepted. Not necessarily that Ben's the worst quarterback in the division, but most certainly that he's not the best or even top two. And I don't even hear many people disputing the point when it gets raised. It's just kind of accepted. And you know what? If the criteria that's at hand for a discussion like this is which teams are best equipped for the nearer and longer term future at quarterback, the answer unmistakably is the other three. Ben's 39 years old. But as I see it, the criteria, as long as Ben is in the discussion, as long as Ben is the quarterback in Pittsburgh, has nothing to do with any future other than 2021. You can't presume Ben's going to be here for a season beyond the next one. There'd actually be no logical reason to presume that. So let's dispense with some mythology or misperception or however you'd want to characterize it and look at actual numbers. Because numbers do matter. In yards, total yards, skipping out on all the analytics, games played, games sat, whatever it is, in total passing yards, Ben had 3,803, number one among the AFC North quarterbacks. In touchdowns, Ben had 33, number one among the AFC North quarterbacks. Completion percentage, 65.5, just a little bit ahead of Burrow. Just a little bit ahead of Joe Burrow, but still number one in the AFC North. How about wins? You want to get into wins? Ben was number one in that too. We could do this across the board. We could look at offense overall, even though Cleveland had an infinitely better running game. Even though Baltimore had other things going for it. Lamar Jackson obviously has a lot of things going on with his running ability. Joe Burrow showed a lot of signs for the Bengals to be excited about the future. But Ben was the best quarterback in the AFC North in 2020 by every reasonable, reliable metric. He might not have looked as exciting as those other guys at times. Joe Burrow with some of his flash, especially with his passes downfield, the way he was connecting with Tyler Boyd, AJ Green, Baker Mayfield with some of his, I mean, I find a lot about him obnoxious, but his emotional reactions to big plays that, whether it's real or not, seemed to inspire the Browns. Lamar Jackson coming off an MVP year and still getting it done in the air and, of course, on the ground. And then there's Ben. You know, Ben's just kind of sitting there in the pocket. He's just getting the ball, and he released it. He had the fastest release time in the NFL. That's not exciting. That's not Ben being Ben. Remember that? And Ben didn't throw the ball downfield. I don't say that in a complimentary way. I thought it was his greatest shortcoming. I also thought it was deliberate. He had an unwillingness, not an inability, to throw the ball downfield. But I don't look at any of these four quarterbacks, any of these four situations, and say to myself, man, that's really due to have a script flipped on it in 2021. Like, I really don't see which of these other three guys is in a position to move past Ben as the best quarterback in the AFC North in the only year that a discussion like this would matter. This segment of Daily Shot is brought to you by our new partners at Fubo TV. If you're paying around $200 a month for cable, as most of us do, Fubo TV is $65 a month to watch all the same channels with an emphasis on sports, and now including AT&T Sportsnet Pittsburgh, meaning you can watch all the Penguins games, all the Pirates games, and you've basically lost all your excuses to hang on to cable. For our listeners only, go to FuboTV.com/DK to get 15% off your first month. One more time, FuboTV.com/DK, 15% off your first month. Let's take them one by one. In Baltimore, Lamar Jackson is still going to be trying to work his way back from having the offensive line. Decimated is too strong a word, but losing Marshall Yanda was going to be really tough for them, and it proved to be really tough for the Ravens. And for them to get Lamar back to MVP form, they'd have to get their entire offense running at full blast the way they had it back in 2019, and that's asking an awful lot without having an elite, not a good, not a very good, but an elite offensive line to pair up with their ambitious blocking schemes. They're also going to need to have a wide receiver at some point in the equation. You know, because as we've seen, when teams decide they want to stop Baltimore's running game, we've seen it in particular from the Steelers, they've done a really good job of containing Lamar, making sure with their edge rushers that they keep him inside the pocket, both from the running and the passing standpoints. You can do that. Is Lamar positioned to be better than Ben in 2021, he's better positioned than the other two guys. Let's put it that way. Because he's been that. He was that in 2019. So there's precedent for it. Now, again, Ben was hurt almost entirely in 2019, but point still stands. Joe Burrow is a very different situation coming off of a very serious slash gruesome knee injury. By all accounts, his rehab is going well, but that's a heck of a thing to come back from. And even at the time of the heavy surgery that was required to repair his knee, there were doubts expressed by everybody, other than Burrow, of course, that he'd even be ready for the coming training camp. Put that on his plate, in addition to the fact that he's had almost no offensive line help, because the Bengals thought it was a great idea to go and get this franchise quarterback and then do next to nothing to protect him. You're asking a lot. The Bengals are still going to be a bad football team. And even if Burrow were coming back 1,000% healthy, if his injury had never happened, he still was going to have his back against the wall in year two. Situations like that don't just turn around at the figurative snap of a finger. He's also not going to have the best version of A.J. Green, because the best version of A.J. Green is in the past. Tyler Boyd was Cincinnati's best receiver this past season. I don't think anybody would debate that. And you're going to need to have a healthy and vibrant Joe Mixon, Gio Bernard, and these guys that make the running game go and maybe take some of the pressure off him. But again, those guys get neutralized by the fact that there's no offensive line. So the Bengals have their work cut out for them in terms of blocking for Burrow. It's not an impossible problem to solve, but it's a really difficult one to solve in a single summer. But again, and this isn't wishing anything on Burrow, I love watching the kid play, and I hope he comes back at 1,000,000,000%. I hope he becomes a big, big star in the NFL. He's fun to watch. He's, by all accounts, a good kid, and it wouldn't hurt anybody to have a decent Cincinnati team in the NFL. But at the same time, to suggest or to think that he's going to be better than Ben in 2021 is a stretch and a half for me. And then there's Baker Mayfield, who, if he didn't have the two games against the Steelers at season's end, I am here to tell you, from having covered that last regular season game up in Cleveland, not the playoff game, but the last regular season game, and talking to some of the people up there at First Energy Stadium, I am here to tell you that Mayfield wasn't even going to get qualified on his fifth-year option. That's how down everybody was about his performance in Cleveland. And I'm not just referring to the public. I'm talking about the Browns internally. There was a very strong sentiment that the Browns had done a lot of things right around Baker. Obviously, the two excellent running backs, having OBJ there, having Jarvis Landry there, bringing in Austin Hooper at tight end. They've done nothing but support the guy. And yet he was still losing them games. He would have entire halves where you would just wonder what the heck's wrong with the guy. He'd throw these bizarre interceptions. And it wasn't until they reduced him to basically being a Trent Dilfer-level game manager and telling him, look, this situation, you absolutely cannot throw the football. And it wasn't until they did that that they managed to make him at least passable, which is what he was against the Steelers. Don't build up anything about Baker Mayfield based on those two games. If you go back and look at his statistics, go back and look at how he actually fared overall, all he did, in my opinion, in those two games, other than, of course, advancing the Browns through a playoff round, which is a minor miracle in and of itself, was to ensure that they'd have to keep him on the fifth-year option, which they will. That doesn't line up for me as a quarterback who is poised to be better than Ben in 2021. Do you see where I'm headed here? I mean, notice I didn't even bring up Ben because I don't have to. You know Ben. You know what his situation is. You know how the Steelers can and should improve it around him. You know that Ben did all of these things that I mentioned, even though he had the number 32 rushing attack out of a 32-team league, even though he had himself an offensive line that just seemed to crumble, like instantly, even though his wide receivers led the league in drops. Who was the best quarterback in the AFC North in 2020? Answer that, you've got the same answer you're going to have in 2021. When we come back, just one question. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Time for just one question. If you'd like to leave one, you can do that by visiting DK Pittsburgh Sports. Find the article that contains this podcast and leave it right there in comments. This segment of Daily Shot is brought to you by the personal injury law firm of Luxembourg, Garbutt, Kelly & George, LGKG. They represent people who are hurt in car accidents, who need help with workers' comp, who filed for medical malpractice claims. The attorneys at LGKG have been keeping promises in our region for over 80 years. Learn more about them at lgkg.com or by calling 888-842-5454. And today's question comes from Rick McClelland, who asks, how difficult has the pandemic made your job in covering Pittsburgh sports? You didn't specify the Steelers, Rick, but I'll start with football because that's what this show is, and tell you first and foremost that I was grateful for the accommodation that we received, that we've received, continuing, from the Steelers and from all of the teams that they played, including in road stadiums. It's an extraordinary time, unprecedented, and all the other cliched terms in the coronavirus era. So I'm grateful for all of it. They've been great, the Steelers have, with our company and everything else. It has made the job very difficult. So please take those two things separately. It has made the job very difficult. We've lost the personal touch, and that hurts more than anything else. If we're just going to the stadiums to bring you X's and O's, and there are certain things that we can see in stadiums that you can't on TV. There are certain think of it as the equivalent of the All 22 film that the NFL puts out, if you've ever heard about that, which is the overhead shot of the entire field that lets you see where everyone lines up before every snap and see where they all move. You're not just limited to what the networks show you with all their fancy graphics and the first down marker that shows up on the grass like a big piece of candy corn. We're actually watching the game, and it really helps. It makes a big difference. We're also watching the sidelines. We can tell you who goes into the tent, who's riding a bike, who's looking like they might come into the game, like when Mason Rudolph puts his helmet on and starts throwing. Those are the kinds of things we can bring you that TV might not. So there's a big value on being in there, and that helps a ton. And that's why we traveled everywhere we did, even though we didn't get any additional interview access by being on the road in Jacksonville and Dallas and everywhere else that we flew to over the 2020 season. But for interviews, man, I have had it with the Zoom call. If I never hear the word Zoom call again 2-3 months from now, it'll be one of the best things about the eradication of this virus. I've had it with looking at fuzzy tops of heads and, can you hear me? Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Dropping out, timing out. That's one of my favorites, when the Zoom people tell you that you're, 6 minutes away from timing out. So you start to think, we have to talk about everything in 6 minutes. Not being able to ask follow-up questions. That hurts not only with Mike Tomlin, because I know everybody wants us to constantly ask follow-up questions. Did you follow up on that? How do you let him get away with that? Not being able to go to the players that we need, not just the ones that they give us. You know, when a player has a rotten game or is responsible for a loss, like almost directly, that's the guy we want to talk to, not to rub it in, not to make his life uncomfortable, but to maybe find some answers that will explain to people what actually happened. In some events, that'll actually help absolve the player. Not that that's our goal either, but you're just looking for whatever the truth is. We can't do that. And that's been exasperating for me. I'm a big believer in sharing with our readers and here on the podcast, our listeners, the human element, the exchanges that we have in the locker room, the specific dialogues that we'll have about a specific play that, again, on a Zoom call, like you're going to be on there with, you know, 20 other reporters and you're asking about this one weirdo play and everybody thinks you're nuts. It's just a different setting. I'll give you a positive example here. After the game in Dallas, in which you'll recall the Steelers played very, very, very poorly and somehow still came away with a W, even though the Cowboys were down to like their ninth string quarterback. Can't even remember the dude's name now. And I had a couple of questions that I really felt in the Zoom sessions went unanswered, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. And this is allowed, but it's kind of whatever. It's seen as kind of gaming the system a little bit. I sat there in that press box at AT&T Stadium just so frustrated. I walked to the back, took my phone with me, and texted Cam Hayward and just said, "Hey, Cam," because I knew they were on the bus heading back to DFW to fly out. And I know Cam is pretty good about checking his messages. So I just thought, you know what, I'm just going to give Cam a shout here because Cam wasn't one of the people that was brought in. And I just wanted to get some clarification on something. I wasn't looking to dig up dirt, but I knew he would be a guy that would be good at addressing this. And he was kind enough to text me right back. And then after he answered it, texts yet again, "Do you need anything else?" That's Cam Hayward. They did not have a good game. Again, they won, but they didn't have a good game. He didn't have to answer me at all. We've developed the kind of relationship. I've actually told him this in the past. I said, he's always been my guy because he's always there after the tough ones. And I respect that. But if Cam's not invited to come into the Zoom room, Cam's not going to be that guy. So it's been, I don't mean to sound whiny or complaining or whatever, because the fact is, by the time we get to Latrobe and everything else, I think most of this will have dissipated. You're still going to have some precautions and so forth, but you know, the vaccine is going to be, you'd think, pretty widespread in terms of its distribution by late July when camp would open. But yeah, it's been a challenge. There's no question about that. Thanks for the question. It's really, really good stuff, and I'm glad you asked it. Thanks to everybody for listening, and we'll do this again tomorrow.
Point Park University in the heart of downtown Pittsburgh, they understand there's no substitute for real-world experience and career-building connections. Their innovative curriculum engages students with distinctive experiential learning opportunities. Point Park's pioneering co-op program empowers qualified students to work in full-time, paid positions with their corporate partners while earning college credits. Visit pointpark.edu/works to learn more. Career ready. That's the point. Point Park University.
Your front door, your car, your gym locker, your gun. Safety is a habit. Learn more about how to keep guns safe and secure. Visit projectchildsafe.org.